Welcome to the Ether. Today is Wednesday, January 26th, 2022. And now, a word from our sponsor.
Wow. This episode of the Ether is brought to you by Intern Capital. Everyone knows interns make the world go round, so when it comes to picking out your interns, make sure you choose the best. The best you say, that's right, the best. And everyone knows all the best interns come from Intern Capital. For more information, check out intern.capital and be sure to follow Intern Capital on Twitter for daily shit posts and stock tips.
All right, well, thank you for that. And Terra Spaces appreciates the support, I guess. Intern Capital, everyone. Thank you. Today on the Ether, we have Trading and DeFi with Sam Trabucco from Alameda Research. I don't think I pronounced any of those words right. Now let's take a listen.
Hey, folks. Sorry about that. I think Spaces crashed again, as it usually does. Cool. Just going to reinvite everyone. Awesome. Sam, do you want to try saying something to see if your mic works?
Can you hear me?
Awesome. Yeah, totally. Cool. I think we'll maybe wait like one more minute just to give people who were on the old link the chance to go on the new link. And we'll get started momentarily.
Just checking that I'm not echoing anymore. Okay, good.
No, you're good. You are good. Cool. Awesome. Why don't we get started? And then folks will join in as we continue. Awesome. Okay. Thanks everyone for coming to today's Twitter Spaces. I'm Ryu, one of the core contributors and founders at Zero1. For those who don't know, Zero1 Exchange is a fully decentralized derivatives exchange that's going to be offering perpetual futures, power perps, and then potentially eventually everlastings as well. We're going live tomorrow, actually. And so stay tuned for the exact launch time announcement soon. Today, we're super excited to be joined by none other than Sam Trabucco from Alameda Research. Okay, without doing more intros, I'll let everyone else intro themselves. So I'll go ahead and pass the baton to Ali, who will be moderating today's Spaces.
Hey, everyone. Thank you so much for joining. So I'll be just moderating today's Spaces. I've been helping Zero1 since I met them in Lisbon back in November. So just excited to be here and be chatting with Sam tonight. Stratos, do you want to go ahead?
Yeah, totally. I'm Stratos, another core contributor slash founder of Zero1 Exchange. Excited to be here. And yeah, let's get it going.
Cool. And Sam, you want to give it? I don't think you need an intro, but in case you want to.
Yeah, I'm Sam Trabucco. I'm the co-CEO of Alameda Research, one of the biggest quant trading firms in the space. We're very active in basically every market, and you know have been quite active in the DeFi markets as well. Yeah, excited to talk to you guys.
Cool. All right, let's get started. So we'll start off with an easy question, or it might be hard depending on how you look at it. But Sam, would love to hear. Tell us more about your cheetah poem that you wrote at age 7.
I'm so angry that Dan posted that on Twitter. I guess my teacher liked my poem enough to send it into some book of children's poetry. And it really is not a very good poem, but it was published when I was 7. They censored a line about a cheetah being in your pants. And I think it's very interesting that they thought it was both worth publishing, but also like, you know, it needed to be, even though it needed to be censored, it was still strong enough work to be published. But yeah, Dan got his hands on it, and now the world knows about it. So thank you, Dan, as usual.
That's awesome. And we're looking forward to more of these poem leaks. Hopefully in the future.
I believe that will be the only poem leak, but stay tuned.
Good to know. All right, cool. There's your alpha for the rest of the group. Cool. So Okay, so we've had a lot of interesting events these past few days. Obviously, Friday, you know, everyone was getting ready to, like, basically exit the market. A lot of bearish talk. You know, everyone was saying Monday would be, like, a disaster. And then the next kind of catalyst, people were waiting for today's, you know, talk, obviously, on Wednesday. So just kind of wanted to get your thoughts on the market over the past few days, and also kind of, you know, some of the implications of the Fed's decision that they made today and how that really affects DeFi as a whole.
Sure. So, yeah, I mean, so basically, in terms of like what the, like, you know, the crypto markets and the DeFi markets more specifically, you can't really, it used to be the case that you could talk about these markets like sort of separately from the traditional, like the traditional markets, like the stock market and whatnot. But that's just not the case anymore. Ever since early 2020, when COVID first happened and the stock market crashed as a result of that, the stock markets have just like, you know, become more and more important. Bitcoin and as a result, basically every cryptocurrency has picked up, you know, a pretty strong correlation to the S&P 500 and, you know, other various stock market indicators. But the S&P is like the easiest to talk about. Yeah, so like as the crypto trading ecosystem has sort of gotten more used to the idea that crypto in general will have some beta to the traditional markets, it's sort of become almost a self-fulfilling thing where like it was always true, or at least like, you know, for 2 years it's been true that crypto has some correlation with the normal markets. And as like, you know, maybe the correlation was like sort of weak at first, but like everyone's kind of found out about it. And when everyone finds out that there's a weak correlation, everyone's got to bet on that correlation. And that actually just strengthens the correlation over time. So it's something that gets stronger and stronger. And I think that's sort of been borne out over the past like couple of weeks. The crypto markets are like really moving in pretty much lockstep with the stock markets, with a few, you know, a few important caveats that, like, you know, crypto market structure is such that sometimes there's this more momentum in the crypto markets than other markets. This is because of, like, you know, like if there's a big sell-off, then like a bunch of longs are going to get liquidated, which causes a bigger sell-off. And, you know, there's a few effects like that in crypto that sort of contribute momentum naturally. So I think that this is like why it matters so much. Decisions that are going to impact the stock market are just going to impact crypto by default, I guess. To loop back to the original question about the Fed's announcement today. I think that it's a little overstated how much the Fed's decisions about interest rates and whatnot impact crypto more specifically than they impact anything else. I honestly just don't think it matters a ton for like either crypto or DeFi specifically the details of what the Fed said today. But I do think that because of everything else I've said, decisions about the interest rate, about like federal interest rates are going to impact the stock market, and therefore they're going to impact crypto. But I don't think it's much deeper than that.
Got it. And thank you for that great overview and kind of setting the stage for us. Cool. Back in November, you had like a really great like monster Twitter thread about efficiency in the crypto markets and also the traditional markets. And just wondering, has your thesis changed since then, or do you actually see it? The crypto markets becoming even more efficient?
We're certainly like in the middle of a years long slow march toward efficiency in the crypto markets. Like on a scale from like, you know, crypto in 2016 to the traditional markets, we're certainly like, you know, like crypto has certainly moved in the direction of the traditional markets in a few important ways. I don't think that you could call the crypto markets like, you know, efficient, especially relative to the stock market. As of right now, like in the past couple of weeks, for instance, this is the effect I mentioned before, where like, yes, the crypto markets are moving in lockstep with the stock markets, but there are various market structure features in the crypto markets that make it such that they sort of like have short-term momentum in ways that traditional markets don't. And, you know, one of them we saw, let me see, it was like the 24th, I think. So like, it was like 2 days ago, crypto, like, you know, crashed all the way down to like around, like Bitcoin crashed all the way down to like around 33K. This was like, this happened for like a few reasons, one of which was a downward, like, you know, just sort of general downward motion because the stock market was going down. But it went down more than the stock market did. And that's because of liquidations that you know, that happened where people were very, like, you know, very long, much higher than 33K. And as crypto went down, you know, their highly levered positions got liquidated. And that creates an inefficiency that we see time and time again, where the market, like, you know, crashes too much. And then because no one, like, not no one, but like most people didn't really want to sell down there because they were sort of forced to, it's going to bounce back. And that's exactly what we saw, even just like sort of relative to the stock market move. And so, yeah, I like that kind of inefficiency still exists. That's the kind of thing I talk about on Twitter a decent amount. But, you know, in 2016, the same effect would have been like maybe three-ish times as big. So it's gotten more efficient, and it's going to keep getting more efficient as various things happen. You know, as more sophisticated players enter the space, as you know, people with, you know, larger capital bases who are able to stop these sort of big moves from happening, or not stop them from happening, but like, you know, like, if Bitcoin crashes to 33K and I'm confident it's going to go back to 35, right now a trade you can do is wait till it hits 33. But like, if a bunch of smart people with a lot of capital are in the space, like racing to do that trade, eventually that'll be like, oh, like if I buy it at 33.5, I get all of it instead of waiting and getting a fraction of it at 33. I'll just do that. And that kind of thing happens over and over again, and the market gets more efficient. So that's one thing that, you know, I expect to keep happening in the next, probably over the next 2 or 3 years. I expect, you know, a bunch of smart money to enter the space, and the markets will get like pretty efficient by then. But as of now, they have not.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a kind of great point that you all kind of highlighted. Shifting gears a little bit, Stratos, would love to get your thoughts. So you decided for 01 to build a decentralized exchange over building like a centralized one. So we'd love to get, you know, your reasoning for that. And what are some of the things or factors that helped drive 01's decision to actually build a DEX versus a centralized exchange?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we definitely would love also to hear Sam's thoughts on the future of DEX versus SEX or some combination of both. But overall, our decision was like looking at the future and what will provide a better product. And overall, like decentralized product, if they can provide the same execution as a centralized product, are strictly better because they can provide lower fees, they're more decentralized, they can provide better privacy for a lot of users and don't rely on the central authority. And so when we think about like what will the world look like in, let's say, 5 to 10 years, and if you look also at the speed at which like blockchain is scaling, improving its technology, like the difference between a SEX product and DEX product can decrease dramatically, which means that a DEX product can be a far superior platform to build. And I guess like that were quite a few reasons like why we decided to go with a DEX, obviously like for decentralization, and just like when we are looking in the future is that it can be a much better product. And yeah, one of the reasons like why we also chose Solana, because of the advantages like of speed and scaling and just like how closely we can get to that. Yeah.
Great. And then related to that, Sam, would love to hear your thoughts about your thesis. If you think decentralized exchanges will actually overtake centralized exchanges, and as a follow-up, you know, will Alameda actually be making more trades on, you know, DEXs eventually?
Sure. Yeah. So I can talk about all of this. Yeah, so in terms of, you know, the advantages that DEXs have versus SEXs, so I definitely think that, yeah, a lot of the points, a lot of the points Strauss said are basically right, insofar as, like, yeah, like, there's sort of a lot of inherent advantages that a DEX is going to have as compared to a SEX. Yeah, like, having the capacity, like, in some sense, fees can be lower because there's, like, you know, fewer operational things to be paid for. Like that's definitely right, and you know, basically everything you said is right. I think that there are some disadvantages that they have as well. Like I think that, you know, the fact that there's I don't know the exact numbers off the top of my head, but I think like, you know, $200 billion of volume happened on SEXs over the past day, and nothing close to that happened on DEXs. That's not because like SEXs are superior product or anything like that, but first mover advantage is a pretty real thing, and so I think that like it's going to be like I think it would be fairly difficult to imagine a world in which you know, like DEXs are 100% of volume or something like that, just like even disregarding any like any structural advantages that sexes might have. And I do think that some of that exists as well. Like, yes, it's true that a typical DEX, a typical centralized exchange, is relying on some centralized operator. And if that centralized operator is a bad actor or does something wrong or something, then the system can suffer a great deal. However, it's also true that it's more difficult in general to incentivize people to fix a system, a decentralized system, if something goes wrong in that system. The different decentralized platforms have different ways of addressing this. You can incentivize people with tokens, you can incentivize people in various other ways. There's nothing quite like the incentive that is, I own this platform to fix the problem, to fix a given, a random problem with the platform. It's also true that I think there certainly exist users who value the privacy and the sort of lack of regulation, or not lack of regulation, but different sorts of regulation that will happen on a decentralized platform. There are also users who come to trust a given party and are basically treat that party as though it were infallible, to the point where they want to use a platform governed by that body. So all this is to say, I think that both have advantages over the other. I struggle to imagine a world in which neither, in which one of them doesn't exist. I think they'll likely just coexist and sort of fit different niches. And to the extent that currently the ratio of activity on DEXs to sexes is quite low, I do expect DEXs to gain ground in that, in the ratio of activity on the two. But I think that it will be more toward getting them to a more equal place rather than DEXs overtaking sexes.
Got it. Okay. And that's good to kind of note. Stratos, before we dive into the next question, would love for you to set the stage. So 01 decided to build kind of their product as, using a decentralized order book model. And the other alternative was actually using a virtual AMM model. Could you highlight the difference between the two?
Yeah, I think actually in August, September, Rui and I spent quite a lot of time researching different VMM designs, trying to figure out if there's a perfect design which can help both liquidity providers and traders at the same time. And the constant problems that we struggled with is that once we are making it better for liquidity providers for the protocol, we are making slippage usually higher, which in fact means the user experience worse. And that was a huge trade-off and made us things that order book model is much better suited for that and removes that misalignment of incentives overall, on the protocol designer side, liquidity providers and traders. And so that's kind of why we can continue with pure VMM design and leaned into more order book model and continue building out. And I think chatting with CRM team was especially great, figuring out what's the next step there and how we can scale the platform and what we can do next, to sort of bring that centralized experience of an order book on chain for our derivatives.
Got it. And Sam, would love to hear your thoughts on the VAMM model versus a decentralized order book, and what are some of kind of the pros and cons of using a decentralized order book model?
So I think that having a decentralized order book is it's easier to understand what's going on, I guess, just from looking at you can literally see an order book. And I think that is helpful for some people, I guess. It has disadvantages insofar as it's discretized. It's almost a discretized version of a VAMM or an AMM in general. Insofar as there's a finite set of things you can do at any given time, as opposed to being able to do any size order or whatever at any given time. I tend to think it's easier to understand an order book just because you're literally just looking at all the orders you could execute right now, and it's sort of just you can just see them, which I find a lot easier. But it's from the perspective of an automated trading system, which is most of what Alameda is doing. They're kind of the same insofar as that at any given point in time, we have a set of things we could do. And that set of things you can do is encoded differently with an AMM or an order book. A bot can understand either and kind of spit out a similar set of options at any given time. So from the perspective of someone who's taking liquidity, They're kind of the same, or like you can at least morph them into each other.
Got it. Okay, cool. Thank you for that overview, both Stratos and Sam. Switching gears. So Sam, as kind of like a market participant, curious, like what factors do you actually take into consideration when you decide like which protocols to use and participate in? And I can get into the second question after that, but yeah, would love to hear your answer for that.
So there's different, like, basically, we'll start using a platform if we think it's profitable to use the platform, I guess. And profit can come from, you know, a number of places. The most general and the one that comes up the most often is there a lot of liquidity on this platform? This comes up more if we're, looking to use the platform for our general purpose trading. Which will involve a lot of providing and, but like more importantly, taking liquidity. So basically, if there's a lot of liquidity on a platform, then we will trade on it, or like we'll be pretty incentivized to integrate it with our bots. And liquidity, like, you know, obviously can look in a number of different ways. Like we just talked about, like it can look like an order book. It can be an AMM that has, is effectively providing a lot of liquidity by, having, you know, various parameters that are friendly to takers. We basically just calculate how much liquidity we think we will be able to generate from the platform. We always have some estimate for how much like a given trade that we do is worth. We can subtract whatever fees the platform has, and then we can just kind of understand how much money we think we're going to make by trading on the platform. And that's basically how we decide. Some platforms have idiosyncratic things going on where, like, you know, they're heavily incentivizing people to trade on their platform by having either like very, very low fees, via some reimbursement program or whatever. Like, yeah, I don't know. I'm sure you guys have seen various things where exchanges try and get people to trade on the platform. So basically we just analyze what the opportunity looks like just from the perspective of someone who's going to be trading a lot and go from there.
Got it. And Stratos, would love to hear you kind of comment on some of the things that Sam just talked about, specifically about addressing the liquidity issues.
I think I totally agree with Sam. Like, especially from any trading firm perspective, you want to come to a platform to trade. Like, so generally, no matter how clean your protocol design is, like, no matter how nice your UI is, if liquidity is not there, and you have to like incur a gigantic like slippage, like, you will never trade there. And I think that's why, like, we emphasize, like, throughout our, like, development process, like, talking to other people is, like, bringing market makers on board, including Alameda, and also trying to bring more market makers from outside of Solana to make sure that, like, people who trade on our platform are not suffering from slippage and obviously have, like, a great user experience as well. So overall, like, that's, like, how we try to address it, like, just try to bring as much liquidity on board as possible and make sure that... otherwise, like, also experience is great.
Got it. Okay, cool. Thanks. Sam, like, how does it differ with these protocols when you're deciding whether to provide liquidity versus take on the market?
Sure. Yeah. So most of what I said before was about taking liquidity. But what I said before basically describes our entire process for deciding whether to be, like, you know, doing things or, like, you know, running kinds of strategies that will involve taking liquidity. When we're deciding if we should be a provider on a platform, so it really depends on what the structure is for the most part. To some extent, if there's already a lot of trading happening on a platform, then we kind of view them as, like, very similar, making and providing, or making and taking. And that's sort of just because, like, if there's already a lot of trading happening, then we kind of expect that we'll be trading a decent amount. We have a lot of experience parameterizing our, like, what kind of orders we should be placing at any given time, such that we'll, like, be charging enough edge to make money from them and whatnot. So, like, yeah, we're pretty good at that. So it's really that, like, from that perspective, it comes down to the same things, which is how much trading is there? Is this worth our time, basically? Because there's a lot of dev costs to integrating a new platform. Our dev resources, like everyone's, tend to be fairly strapped at any given time. The other thing is, like, for a newish platform, it can often be the case that we're incentivized to be providing just because, like, you know, like, maybe maybe they've given us some incentive to do that. Like, maybe they've, like, given us tokens or something like that. Maybe they've directly paid us, and all of the things will, like, happen sometimes. And yeah, so we basically just think about how much money we're going to make by doing it. Does it beat the other things we could be doing with our time? And then it's pretty easy from there.
Cool. Thanks for that. Stratos, really, before we jump into the next question, so obviously you've worked on releasing Power Perks these past few weeks. So we'd love to hear like a quick overview. And then after that, we'd love to get Sam's thoughts on Power Perpetuals.
Yeah, absolutely. So you decided to go with Power Perps, like one of our other products, to sort of like start innovating more in the space, like trying to provide more different tools for users to use. And initially, some people might remember we were working on everlasting options, but then decided to pivot because like we saw that Power Perps is a perp which is basically where your price is squared. So if Solana right now is $100 or $90, it would be $10,000. Instead, and you'll be trading that product. And the question is like, why would you trade it? The reason is that you have this magical thing, convexity, which everyone is talking on Twitter, reposting and stuff. But basically, it means is that if you went on leverage with the same position size, like you will get less returns when the price goes up, and you lose money if price goes down. Obviously, it's like not free money, there are like some caveats. And one of them is that the responding rate. But if you manage your position appropriately, it's probably a better solution for traders to use. And the other thing is that we see it as a potential integration into multiple protocols. And we're actually working with Friction, Katana, Chess to sort of figure out a way how this product can be used in those structured products, as many people have seen them being used. That's like one part of our timeline. And the second part is that we want to also find a way like to allow traders to hedge their impairment loss, and Power Perps actually are incredible for that if like funding is low enough. Yeah.
Great. Yeah, thank you so much for explaining Power Perps. Sam, would love to hear your thoughts on Power Perpetuals.
Yeah, I mean it's like an exciting kind of product. It's a unique way for people to get exposure to, or like, to make volatility bets, things like that, hedge their volatility exposure. And like, there's a few other like kind of cool things you can do with the product that are like fairly unique. I'd never seen anything quite like this before. It's one of those things where I do think that, so I mentioned first mover advantage as something that centralized platforms have. I think that options do some of the same things as Power Perpetuals in not all the same things. And certainly, like, I think Power Perps are doing something quite unique. There exists pretty unique applications for them anyway. I'll be interested to see the extent to which as crypto grows and as volatility products become a more important part of the ecosystem, to what extent they're able to usurp some of what I would guess is something like a first mover advantage that options have. Obviously that's not exactly right in this case, because there isn't an extremely popular options platform right now in crypto. But I think that like sort of a default expectation I would have if I knew nothing about alternatives is that as people want to make vol bets in crypto, they'll do it via options, no matter how that ends up looking. So I'll be curious to see the extent to which that shakes out. Power Perps end up growing in popularity. I kind of hope they do. They're very cool, and it's the kind of product that Alameda has a lot of fun trying to figure out how to price. So I would be very excited about them if they do become popular.
Nice. Okay. Great to hear. I just want to do a quick time check. Sam, do you have a time you need to leave by?
I should probably go by a half an hour from now, but I'm not in a rush right now.
Okay. Cool. Thanks for letting us know. Just let us know if you have anything that comes up. Kind of shifting gears, so over the weekend, obviously, there was a lot of commentary on Solana and some of the issues that users were experiencing. Curious, how did this affect Alameda? And
Alameda is providing on a bunch of platforms that run on Solana, and not just providing, we're trading we're doing all kinds of our trading activities on a bunch of platforms that rely on Solana. It interrupts our ability to do that, obviously, when Solana is having some downtime. But I don't know, like, we've built our systems in a way such that, like, you know, when something like that happens, it's not like our systems crash or anything. Like, we just sort of can't provide as well on the platforms that are affected. And, you know, sometimes we have to make a decision, like, oh, like, if we think that there's enough downtime that, like, we might not be able to cancel all our orders, we might have to be a little wider than usual, or something like that. And it doesn't tend to be a huge deal in particular. So, like, that's one way it affects us. It's really the only way it affects us, to be honest. Like, from a trading perspective, all you have to do is, like, be aware of what's going on. And we can always, like, change our parameters or, like, you know, modify our systems a little bit to account for something like that. But yeah, it's not like it's like detrimental to us or anything.
Great. Thank you so much. Strata here.
Yeah, I think Ali, you're cutting out a bit. I believe you're redirecting question to what you're doing, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of like hate directed towards Solana that assumingly like no one is doing anything about it. But in reality, it's on the contrary, is that everyone is actually working on that problem. Every protocol that I know of in the background, dev teams are like trying to figure out what's the best solution to handle it. And as I think like today, Anatoly had a Twitter Spaces with Buffalo just talking about like what Solana is doing around those liquidation events. But I think it's also like fair to say that no other blockchain is facing those problems because of like just the different number of transactions being processed and products running on Solana. And obviously, as a protocol that we're launching like literally tomorrow, we have quite a few things addressing it. Like, for example, you can always like reduce your position without needing to rely on oracles or repay your debt and all that stuff, which I think like quite a few protocol implemented as well after all of those congestions. And we had a chance like to learn from their mistakes and figure out like what to do about it. And overall, like we have also quite a few tricks to get like prepared in case congestion happens to sort of alleviate the pressure, like, and deal with those massive liquidation events. And overall, like our dev team is working with others like to mitigate the solution in the future, how to handle liquidations better, how to make sure that our users are capable of submitting transactions. And I think like we will be quite transparent about like our next steps and what we'll be releasing on that end to prevent users from liquidating. But overall, like this entire issue will be disappearing over the next few weeks. So I don't think that's like is a problem. Is that I guess if people are stating it that Solana is no longer a usable chain. It's quite on the contrary when you look at the usage and how many programs are running, etc.
Cool. Okay, I'll just see if I'm still cutting out. But if not, you know, Sam, what are some lessons we can actually take from TradeFi options, especially in regards to bringing in more retail, and like what can DeFi learn from that?
Yeah, so I think that, like, you know, there's a bunch of reasons that options are a popular product in the traditional markets. Like, there's a bunch of stuff you can do with them. They allow people to put on, like, you know, relatively high leverage bets, assuming that, like, you know, it depends on what exactly the kind of bet you're trying to make is. And options tend to allow you to make more distributional bets than strictly delta bets in general. But still, like the general point that options tend to be like a low dollar product that lets you attain similar kinds of exposure means that you're often able to, especially if you're making a fairly specific bet, you're often able to lever up quite a bit with options. And so that's one thing that sort of attracts people to using options to make bets. Something else that people use options for pretty routinely in traditional markets is as like a hedge, basically, like if you you can like construct various portfolios where like maybe I'm long some stock and I can get short some option on that stock as like basically a cheap way of ensuring the position and making sure that like you know like maybe like as like you attain downside risk basically, and yeah, so that's the kind of thing that attracts retail to options in traditional finance, and I think it's the kind of thing that like should. Or at the very least, should be appealing to people in crypto as well. And I'm not going to claim to be like a marketing expert or anything like that. To the point where like I don't really know how to get people interested. I don't know how to reach the people who will be naturally interested in these kinds of like insurance policies and these kinds of like specific specific bets about distributions, but like I'm fairly confident these people should exist, and yeah, reaching them is, I think, an important thing for any options platform, and in particular a DeFi options platform, because I do think that there's some extent to which, like, once people hear about this, they'll likely be interested in it, but like getting them to hear about it is probably an important part of it.
Cool. Stratos would love to hear what 01 is doing to bring retail, that retail experience to kind of the 01 exchange.
Yeah, I think for a lot of reasons, like, retail is just not interested in options right now. Like Sam mentioned, that a lot of people are looking to lever up with options, which is not that necessarily when you can go long to 100x on BTC or ETH, like on some exchanges. But overall, I think like some other properties of options are overlooked. And I think what we're trying to do at 01 is making sure that our protocol has the flexibility to experiment a lot with different products to find that good product market fit, and overall like experiment in the design as well to make sure that options are like easily understandable by people. I think like we saw quite a few products like in Asia catching on option side just because they make it a lot easier for retail to understand what option is, and simplifying a lot of complexities around that. And that's what we want to work on like over the next few months, and having like also the possibility of like, let's say, launching forward perps this month and maybe everlasting options in next month, etc., without necessarily sacrificing protocol efficiency, just like trying to find that product, like the right product which works for retail on the option side.
Great. Thank you so much for that overview. Sam, like over the past few months, we have seen a lot of structured products launching on Solana. Curious if you think there is an oversupply of these, and if they will last. And also, what's kind of the natural next step, whether it's IL hedge strategies or crab strategies? I'm curious what you're thinking about this.
Sure. To the extent that there's an oversupply of structured products in Solana, maybe. I don't know. I think that if the space continues growing, there's certainly room for competition. There's certainly room for like a diversity of these kinds of products. One important thing is that when you ask like what do I think is next, like IL, crab strategies, whatever, I have no idea. This is the kind of thing where I mentioned before. No matter how these products work, Alameda can integrate them into our systems in a way where, like, from our perspective, it looks kind of similar. They're not all identical or anything, and we can't like fully morph these things into each other. But our systems can work with any of them. I don't think we're I don't think I represent the target demographic for impermanent loss protection, for instance. When Alameda puts on a trade, we hedge it anyway. We can do all kinds of things to make it such that these systems like all work for us. To answer the question of which of these will be more popular, I don't have an amazing gauge on this, and I think that it's important to have a diversity of options because I think that no one really knows what retail is going to want, if the number of people 100x'd who are using products like this. I think it's like kind of hard to say which of them is going to be the most popular. So I think that having a variety of different ways for these kinds of products to work is really valuable insofar as it's sort of one, has the potential to attract like a higher variety of people to the space. Two, if you assume that there exists some ideal version of these products, having like a ton of different options, especially like pretty different seeming options, is helpful in terms of like arriving at that ideal via iteration. That's just like, I guess, what evolution is. And I don't think I have a great answer to which of them will be next or which of them will win or whatever. I think that having like an oversupply of products is like, if anything, a boon for the early stages of DeFi and of Solana, which we're still in. That's kind of what I have think about this. But I don't feel especially strongly about any of that.
Cool. Awesome. Stratos would love to, out the gate, what will 01 be offering day one, and what can we expect in the next few months?
Yeah, I think tomorrow we are planning to launch first perpetuals, probably one market at a time, and a few collaterals, but we are also preparing to launch power perpetuals soon after. I think we want to have a gradual release of products, and scale dramatically over the next few weeks by offering more and more, depending, like, as we are ready to face any demand there is right now on the technical side. And yeah, probably the first market will be Solana, as probably the most popular one on Solana chain, and soon after we'll add more. And obviously Squall will be coming in a week or two to 0.1 as well. Squall meaning squared sol.
Great. Okay, cool. Switching gears a little bit, Sam, curious if your views on NFTs have changed, especially since what you've seen in the past few months.
I mean, like, kind of. Like, I still feel basically like I don't understand NFTs to some extent, or at the very least, like, Hey, I think I cut out. Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, sorry. Yeah, so I basically still feel like kind of outside of the target demographic of NFTs to some extent. I don't know. Like, I posted like 6 months ago or something on Twitter about how NFTs represented something that kind of blindsided me in like how popular then it like became. Just because, like, yeah, I would not have predicted that a priori. And I still kind of feel like that, insofar as, like, I don't exactly understand what drives their popularity. At least some versions of NFTs. Like, there are use cases that make a lot of sense to me. Like, things like tickets, things like NFTs and gaming, those make a lot of sense to me. And those, I would kind of just expect that to be like, where NFTs shine. But a lot of the, like, you know, the JPEG projects, like, those are a little beyond me. I've kind of come to accept that they are popular and have value. And so that's one way in which my thinking about NFTs has shifted. But it's closer to, like, an understanding of the world, or at least, like, I would say that I've gotten better at describing the world and predicting how the world will react to some things, as opposed to, like, some kind of, like, inherent understanding of what's going on there. But, you know, yeah, I think that's how that's the extent to which my view has changed. But it's nothing foundational.
Ali, I don't think we can hear you.
Okay, I think I'm back. Sorry, I don't know what's going on Twitter Spaces today. It looks like everyone is having issues. Cool. Stratus, do you want to talk a little bit about, you know, 0.1's, how they're thinking about NFTs? And, you know, is this something that 0.1 might think about integrating something with NFTs in the future?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's undeniable that NFTs, like, got a lot of interest. Like, just when you look at how many users there are, like, on OpenSea, on ETH, like, and how many users there are, like, on Solana.
Space is not working great today, huh?
Okay, let me see if Stratus is going to come back on. I guess, like, everyone's getting cut off today. So let's just give him, like, 30 seconds. And if not, we'll move on to the next question.
Yeah, sounds good.
Okay, well, while we wait for Stratus to reconnect, can you still hear me?
I can, yeah.
Okay, cool. Ryu, do you want to take the question on NFTs? Okay, looks like...
Totally. Wait, can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Cool. Yeah, I'll quickly sub in for Stratus, but so I think, like, on our side, you know, we sort of see the same trend with NFTs sort of, like, coming out of nowhere and being this sort of curveball. And so for us, we're, you know, we've also chatted with a few different NFT projects, and we're super excited to sort of look towards, essentially, in some ways, and as much as we can, bridge the NFT community and the DeFi community. There's a few things we're pretty excited about. If folks were around for our DevNet, they would have known about the sort of NFTs that we released for some of the folks who played around on our platform and were early in our Discord. We do have a special day zero thing coming up just for launch. I want to sort of reserve the sort of the full announcement for that later. But yes, I think, like, there's sort of a lot of opportunities to bridge the NFT and DeFi space. We're super excited to sort of think about and sort of pioneer that movement.
Awesome. Looking forward to that. Cool. So I think we're gonna start wrapping up. Sam, for kind of the last question.
I think you're cutting out again. I think you were gonna ask if there was any alpha I have to share.
Yeah, with the group today. Yeah, if you could.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have anything especially new to say. I think that the, the markets have been down a lot for the past few weeks, which can be, frustrating. And especially as people are losing a bunch of money, Alameda has lost a decent amount to our positions over the past few weeks, just like everybody else. It can be a very frustrating thing when that kind of thing is going on. One thing that you'll hear a lot of people talking about in gaming communities and poker communities and whatnot is tilt and the concept of tilt. And what tilt is, for people who don't know, is when something goes wrong for you, especially something that feels out of your control, there's a tendency to be very frustrated by it and to let that frustration influence your decision making going forward. The difference between a good poker player and a bad one often is how they respond to tilt. And this is true in trading as well. I think that I've met plenty of otherwise really strong traders in my life who are bad enough at decision making when they're frustrated or upset or tilting otherwise that makes them net bad traders because they're so bad when they're in this small fraction of the time that their expected value is just negative because of it. And I think that it's really important to sort of be able to recognize that you are that your decision making is bad because of your mood and sort of just try and remove yourself from the situation to whatever extent you can. Sometimes I'll recognize that I shouldn't be trading and I'll just take a walk or something like that because I'm frustrated by something. I've gotten better at that to the point where it's pretty rare that I have to remove myself from a situation, but it still happens, and it definitely happens a lot to people who are newer to, making decisions that have money impact. That's something that most people in their lives aren't doing that often. But when you're if you're trading actively in the crypto markets, you're doing it all the time. Your decisions can be very important, can affect your bottom line quite a lot. Recognizing when you're not in a good position to make them can be just as important as making a good decision. If that makes sense. I think that as people are have been losing money, it's really important to think about this kind of thing. Alameda is right there with you. So
great. Thank you so much for that review. Strata.
Yeah, I think Ali's cutting out, but I think we should end this space at this point. Thank you so much, Tim, for coming. I guess from 01 side, just wanted to say that excited to see everyone to try 01 Exchange tomorrow. I'll be going live, and if you're feeling bad about the market, if Sam was not reassuring enough, you can always go short. That's also supported. And thanks again for everyone for coming. Thank you, Sam, for joining. Thank you, Ali, for moderating.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, everyone.
Thanks for checking out another episode of The Ether. That was the trading in DeFi space with Sam Trabuco from Alameda Research. Recorded on Wednesday, January 26th, 2022. And now a word. From our sponsor.
Wow. This episode of The Ether is brought to you by Intern Capital. Everyone knows interns make the world go round, so when it comes to picking out your interns, make sure you choose the best. The best you say, that's right, the best. And everyone knows all the best interns come from Intern Capital. For more information, check out intern.capital and be sure to follow Intern Capital on Twitter for daily shit posts and stock tips.
Once again, thank you, Intern Cap, for your support. TerraSpaces.org. I'm Finn. Thanks for listening. Walking down the street late night with the worst time. Never underestimate the lines that are curved right. Everyone investigated lying about a birthright. Get it off my chest a bit, typing out a word pie. Gonna eat shit straight to your safe place. Soup with a fly on a spoon in my database. Update the playlist, bumping these 808s. Ain't no way I'm saving face, sitting with these shady mates. Got a whole dug, ready for a head in it. Jumped out a plane, now he's feeling all bedridden. Looking magnificent, dressed like a hoarder. Rip on his tombstone, he couldn't take orders. The game is whack, knick-knack, caddyshack. Go for the low-hanging fruit like a paddy wagon. Maniac, trying to wash off the damage. Just another night throwing javelins. The task on
on his plate. Focus on the craft, lifting up brain weights. Repping that repetition like he's gotta represent. Disconnected from the rest, even when he's feeling blessed. The rest never comes soon enough. Rumors bluff, ruin luck, bruised up from being the elusive one. Mr. Do or Die, suiting up hungry. Like a broke Iron Man, stunting for the country. It's all lovely on the day he got the call. It was time to ship out, done waiting on y'all. Isolation on the pilot ship was a fucking cakewalk. He was made for the rush. When it's time to find a planet, who they gonna send? How the fuck you think you gonna handle the descent? About to fall asleep for 20 years, are we there yet? Creeping where no one's ever crept.